This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're joined today by Western Michigan University President John Dunn. Thank you for being here.
Gordon, thank you. It's very nice to be with you. And pardon me, I have a little bit of a cold, but it is me. The voice may be different, but it is me.
And also here is Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Yvonne, first question for President Dunn.
President Dunn, there was the shooting at the fraternity house about a week ago, and the fraternity has since been temporarily suspended by the university. I wanted to ask a little bit just about the safety of students and the climate on Western.
Well, of course, safety of students is first and foremost on any president's list, and it's critical that we maintain good safety for our students. We do have a fraternal system here, fraternities and sororities. We feel good about that. I've been asked many times, what's your view of fraternities and sororities? And it's positive. I think they do many good things. But incidents like this are really create a black mark, not only for the fraternal group, but for the university as a whole. And, of course, the most importantly is, again, the safety of our students. So, you know, I like to encourage young people, when I go to work in the morning, I want to have some fun. But fun is not bad. It's about moderation and being respectful of others and using good judgment. And if you have a fraternity that can no longer control its setting and its environment, then, you know, there are consequences for that, and we need to take action, and we have.
What does a fraternity have to do to get off temporary suspension? What's the process here that you go through? What sort of things do you review?
Yeah, that's really left to the Vice President for Student Affairs, Dr. Anderson, and her staff. And they are very thoughtful about trying to look at each situation and the facts of that situation in terms of suggesting what the remedies would be and the appropriate action. Of course, then there's a national group that also gets involved, because national organizations of the fraternal groups want to make sure that their chapters are acting appropriately and doing the right thing. So it's a multifaceted kind of thing. I don't think we're out of control in terms of what are the appropriate sanctions, but, you know, there have to be sanctions and people have to be held responsible. And I think the idea that for a period of time, you're going to have to really have your act together, and you're going to have a very, very appropriate and responsible house and good members.
MLive recently did a story on the debts and liabilities of universities in Michigan. One of the things that came out in that article, which I had not seen anywhere else, is that Standard & Poor's downgraded its outlook on Western Michigan University's
outstanding
bonds.
That's not correct.
Bonds.
Let me correct you there.
Okay.
They did not downgrade us. In other words, our rating stayed the same. What they did is they changed our outlook from stable to negative. But that's not a downgrade, and it has been reported that way, and that's always insulting and a little infuriating when people report it that way. So pardon me, but I want to
No, that's
sure
fine.
That
Let's make sure we
clear.
Have it right.
Yeah.
But among the reasons for changing the outlook is the risk of starting a new medical school and flat enrollment trends. So with the outlook having been changed from stable to negative, is that a cause for the long-term financial concern of Western Michigan University?
Well, I will say this. We went out for our bonds last week, and the response to that was exceptionally good as we've ever seen. And I think that it's important to acknowledge that there are two rating agencies that we have, Moody's and Standard & Poor's. Moody's came, actually spent a day here, looked at the community, looked at the university, and left with a kind of a gaga attitude about no change. They were very happy with what they saw.
Was Standard & Poor's
Standard
less,
& Poor's
less,
did theirs by
thorough?
Phone
okay.
For ours. In interviews, and I think by the admission of even some folks in Standard & Poor's, they have some difficulty understanding the complexity of the medical schools. For instance, one of the questions that was asked or an observation was made, well, what if the hospitals should somehow go out of business? Well, you know, these hospitals have been here forever. They're not going to go out of business or anchor institutions. So in some ways, it was a little insulting, but I think that it will change. I do think there's some news in the works that can be very positive with respect to the medical school that could change all of that rather quickly.
Going back to that MLive article, one of the things they mentioned about universities in Michigan and why there are more long-term liabilities and debt on the sheet is that they're in what they call an amenities arms race. In other words, new buildings, new facilities. In terms of what you've done at Western Michigan University, do you think you've been prudent in terms of putting up new buildings and in terms of are you, you know, spending – balancing the cost versus what you want to do to attract new students?
Yeah, I do understand your question, and I have read same. I think there is sort of this argument that students are demanding these amenities, and therefore we're responding as such. We are responding as such, but I don't think we're being over the top in terms of the amenities that we're providing. These are the kinds of things that most parents and grandparents and people who love young people would expect on a university campus. And some of that relates to better procedures for safety in terms of the amenities you need to be able to get out a safety warning to students. You know, some would view that as an amenity. I mean, in the old days, you did a bugle in the center of a campus. Well, that no longer is successful, and we can't do it that way. I think our residential living that we put together is a very nice apartment complexes on campus. Those would be no different than the amenities that a student might find in the community. The difference is it is within the university, and we know what the impact of that is on a student success rate in terms of graduation and retention. So we're pleased about that. Remember that overall our budget, when we started here in 2007, we had an operating budget deficit. We no longer have that deficit. Do we have a debt load? Yes, we do. We service that well. And I think we've been very thoughtful. We've just gone through another of our audits, and our overall financial health is good.
Yvonne?
Dr. Dunn, I had a question about Western's recent formal affiliation with Cooley Law School, which both presidents just signed. I was wondering if you could maybe give us a sense of what is Western hoping to get out of this partnership?
Yeah, I think, if you go way, way, way back, at one time, Western Michigan University actually had on its planning dockets the development of a law school. And at that time, there was a feeling that, Ann Arbor had a law school, Michigan State does not, and then some discussions about all of that. And, of course, then Michigan State really affiliated, and that is the term, with the Detroit College of Law. And the Detroit College of Law, today we know it as Michigan State University College of Law, but it has a separate governance structure, very similar to what we are proposed with Cooley. It has its own board. It's a separate, discrete entity within Michigan State University. What we hope to get out of this is that certainly to eventually have a 3+3 for students so that they can access a great education at Western Michigan University and an equally fine law degree working through Cooley. In addition to that, there are many JD graduate programs that we have already in place, but more that we would like to have in place. And today it's not about, you've heard me say this before, it's not so much about competing. It's more about how do we look at limited resources and utilize those wisely to the benefit of students. I mean, that's really what the mission is. And if we can do that, and I think we have a good plan to do that, I think it's going to be very successful.
What are the similarities and the differences between what Michigan State did with the Detroit College of Law and what Western, at least at the outset, is planning to do with Cooley Law School?
I had a very nice conversation several months ago with Peter McPherson, who was the president at that time at Michigan State. And Peter also has a JD and is now the CEO of the Association of Public and Land-Grant Universities. So, and a graduate, by the way, a graduate degree from Western Michigan University. But he was very affirmative and very positive about the Cooley affiliation. We had a long conversation, and then he gave me the history of how the Detroit College of Law made the transition to Michigan State. If you'll go back and look at your history, it was the Detroit College of Law at Michigan State University, then it was the Michigan State University Detroit College of Law, and then ultimately it became Michigan State University College of Law. But when you go in and look at the documents that I've been able to access, it maintains its separateness, its discrete governance structure. I assume that its finances do the same. And, of course, that's what we've proposed all along in our relationship. We don't want to be, we never want to mislead anyone about that, and we'll make sure that people understand clearly what an affiliation is and what it is not. And we have a responsibility to do that for our students. And we still have the ABA, the American Bar Association, and the Higher Learning Commission. We need their reviews and approvals. The Michigan State College law is not HLC, but it is ABA. Cooley is a Higher Learning Commission, as is obviously Western Michigan University.
We are speaking on Tuesday morning, so the federal government shutdown has just begun. Does that have any impact on, say, student aid, student loans, federal research dollars right now?
Yeah, right now the impact would be minimal, but we are keeping our eye on it. And there have been some documents and some transmittal of letters to universities and university presidents indicating that offices on financial aid and being able to access that kind of information and help and support is available. I think the area of concern might, as we look longer term at National Science Foundation, National Institute of Health, and impact it might have in terms of support. I am worried about visas. We have a large number of students that do study abroad. We have faculty that travel around the world. And if you're going to get a visa, as we all heard this morning on NPR, you better do it quick.
On student loans, I want to ask you about another topic here, because the Detroit Free Press had a story today showing that default rates among Michigan students are up for the last three-year period they could examine. Then there was also a big article in Rolling Stone on students who are left with this large amount of debt at the end of their college careers. And a question was raised there, if there isn't just too much credit available, and therefore colleges and universities are not feeling the pressure to bring their costs down because they know students can get the money to get in the door. The question is, can they pay it on the other side? What's your reaction to that?
First of all, I don't know any of us that get terribly excited about seeing individuals in a lot of debt. And I think that's an overstatement. I didn't read the article as such, so I can't comment more about what was the intent of the author. I think the universities have been very responsible, and I believe that even the budget director for the state of Michigan would concur with that. The challenge is there has been a failure on many states, and to some extent this is true of Michigan, to provide the financial support that's necessary for students. There was a time where the state of Michigan provided scholarships for students. They don't do that anymore. Those dollars are all gone. And so, you know, the question of debt is that we're trying to do our part. Families are clearly trying to do their part. Students are working like crazy to try and sustain themselves. But also remember, we don't control the debt load. And if a student takes out a loan, they can do with that loan anything they want to do. But it's all viewed as educational debt. If I choose to go buy a car with my student aid loan, I can go buy a car. Now, maybe I need that for work, but do I need a new car? Okay. So, you know, we don't govern what students and families choose to do with those dollars that they get through those loans.
I've heard you raise that point before, and yeah. I'm sure that that is part of the problem, but I guess I just wonder, has anyone studied how much of the problem that is as compared to rising tuition, rising fees, rising costs of other things?
You know, I think that's a very good question. I think it's an excellent observation, and if we had access to all that data, but, you know, there are certain privacy things that make it very difficult for us to be able to monitor all of that. And then we have to get inside of every family structure and every student's mind in terms of what do they really need. I mean, obviously, they need to pay their tuition, they need books, they need a place to live, and they need food on the table. But once you get beyond that, I mean, how many other, to use your term earlier, amenities do they need, right? And you know, those are some pretty interesting questions, and I think a good economist that could do an analysis here would be helpful. Are we worried about our debt load? Absolutely. Is our debt load has it risen? Yes. Do we watch that? Yes. But I also want to change the subject, and I'm very proud that our students who do take out loans are ability to continue to pay, and the students do, is much more responsible than what we see for proprietaries or we see for other public universities. Our students do very, very well, and families are responsible. I'm proud of them, yeah.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Our guest today is Western Michigan University President John Dunn. Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette is also here. Yvonne, next question for President Dunn.
Also today, the first community meetings regarding the redesign of East Hall are going to be going forward. I wondered, is there a sense yet of how much of the wings may be saved or where you are with fundraising on that?
That's really part of the conversation today, and just so that the public is aware, although I guess this will be reported later, I will not be in attendance because I want to make sure that the public and others have full access to provide input, and I wouldn't ever want to dampen that kind of discussion or conversation in any way. Now, let me say one thing to you, though. When you said the redesign of East Hall, remember, it's the redesign of East Hall and East Campus. I mean, we have a vision there of a really beautiful park-like setting that will become, I think, a destination that people will come to not only see East Hall and partake in activities there, but also to enjoy the grounds and the setting and the environment. And as we all know, our landscape crew is second to none anywhere, and that's going to be a very lovely setting.
So is there a sense of the wings yet?
No, there is not. Much of it comes down to money again, and that's one of the things that we're trying to access to assess along with what would we do with them? Do you do one and not the other? What does it do to the balance, the look, the feel? And we have good architects that are looking at that and are trying to think that through carefully. Money will be an issue, though, and you know there could be an opportunity if someone said, you know, I'd like to help with that aspect of it.
Is there a deadline here by which you think you really have to make a decision going forward about how much of East Hall is going to be able to to stand?
Yeah, there is a deadline from the standpoint. We're not trying to set a record, but we're on go. And when you're on go, you're on go. And I can tell you what I have seen thus far of the design and the functionality of East Hall with or without the wings is very, very attractive. And I think it will be it will honor our history, our legacy. And I think that the downtown view looking up at the columns is going to be very, very stunning.
I want to ask you another question about cost related to students, because a year from now, we will have the first students at the new medical school at Western Michigan University. Something that we've touched on before, but I maybe want to get a little more out of you on this is in terms of what students are going to pay, because a new medical school often has to really come in at a lower number in terms of price, because students are taking a bit of a leap here with a new institution. And of course, you want students who could go anywhere if you can get them. Is there any plan yet in place in terms of trying to get scholarships, those sort of things, so that first group of students is perhaps paying a little less than they may pay a few years down the road?
No, first of all, I don't know that your premise is correct, that a new medical school has a lower tuition rate and needs to have a lower tuition rate. That's never been part of our conversation. You know, we have over 2,900 applicants right now for 50 seats. And of those, I think Hal told me the other day, Dr. Jensen, that 1,800 would be stellar on anybody's list. So I don't think we're going to have trouble there at all. And our cost structure will be certainly very competitive with others. But, we have aspirations to be not only a medical school, but an outstanding medical school. And so I think when you look at Ann Arbor, Michigan State, and others, and what Wayne State and what they charge, will be that plus. I'm not sure that that's been set yet by Dr. Jensen. And as the chair of the board, we haven't had that conversation, but we'll get into that conversation soon.
I base that premise on the University of Central Florida, which launched a medical school a few years ago. and got scholarship money so that that entire first class, not a very big class, was able to get a free ride.
Right.
It was, and the rationale at Central Florida was, we want students who would consider going anywhere to consider us, even though we are just starting this medical school.
Yeah, and you're correct on that. And we have early on looked at that. I think the unstated there, and I don't know that we could get anyone to validate this, but let me say off record, the conversation is that was really great for the first class. What do you do with the second class? And how do you integrate the second, third, and fourth class knowing that the first class is essentially on a free ride? And it didn't go very well with the second, third, and fourth class. So it's a great idea, but unless you think it through in terms of the continuity of it, and you can't sustain it, it's not a sustainable model. Now, let's also, though, talk about Oakland. And if you were to look at Oakland's first class in, their class profile would be comparable to anything that we see in the state of Michigan. And they didn't do anything special of that nature either. So there are other models. So we're going to be out. The number of students right now that have MCAT scores that are outstanding, as well as all the other indicators that you would want to see, that there's no room in the inn. They can't get in. And so this is another opportunity for them to get in.
Yvonne?
Yes, I had a, switching to sports, which I almost never do, I had a quick question for you about attendance at Waldo Stadium. Mm. Are you seeing what you were hoping to see in terms of the new season and in terms of, you know, people coming and supporting the team, or are you concerned?
We're always concerned. I'll never be happy until there's, 35,000 people in the stadium. I thought Comm University was a very fine turnout. I thought the student turnout last week was not bad. I'd still like to see more. I did note, although I was on the road yesterday, I did pick up the story last night and found it a little bit interesting, MLive's report on attendance. It is what it is, and I thought we had pretty good turnout the other night. So,
if one goes into the comment section on MLive following a Bronco football story, they're going to read some things, a lot of jokes about rowing the boat sort of thing. And some fans, I suppose, who may be questioning hiring a coach who had no head coaching experience, and now he's not off to a very good start. As the president of the university and someone who was pretty enthusiastic yourself when he was hired, what do you say to the fan base right now who may be a little discontent?
Oh, I think that anybody who has been involved in athletics over an extended period of time that is really a student would acknowledge that when you have a brand new coach, there's many things that complexities that you have to give a person time. And, we're pretty thin. Our cupboard is not full in terms of all the ingredients that a new coach would want right now. And we have some injuries and some other, but, we're not whining about that. That's the way it is. And you take what you have and you play. And I'm really proud of PJ. He's never implied to the kids that that it's about talent level, okay? He's saying, look, you're it, guys, and we're gonna make this go, and we're gonna do the best we can, and you keep working hard, we keep playing hard, and I think that's the message. And I've watched his post-game interviews, and I think he handles himself with enormous class. He does set himself up for high expectations because he has high expectations. He's passionate, I laughed before the Michigan State game. One of the reporters over there thought he was brash. I said, "No, wait a minute. He's passionate. Brash is, I don't necessarily agree with that term." And he has ideals and high expectations of himself and the team and of the university. And so, hey, I join with that. So, we'll let it play out. We'll talk a year from now, two seasons in, and see where we are.
You mentioned, though, the high energy. I mean, is some of that now perhaps working against him a little bit, that people see this coach who's very out there, very, new traditions and those sort of things don't work well when you're...
Oh, yeah. I'd give him high marks. I think he set himself up exactly for what he fully expects and anticipates, and that is that this team eventually and this university eventually and its football program will be operating at an extremely high level. And I don't think he's backed off of that at all. Is he disappointed he's 0-5? Yeah, sure. I don't see him not being there at the same time in the morning or leaving late at night and spending essentially 24/7 to do his part. And I think the kids really believe in him, and they know.
University convocation is Friday. That also includes the State of the University address from the president. Would you care to give us at least a little preview of what you're going to tell us?
I'd really love to do that, but I've been on the road and traveling quite a bit, so I'm trying to carve out a little bit of time to put some thoughts together. I do think that a theme that I'll deal with a little bit is change. And we have been into a time of change. I think more change will come. And so are we as well positioned for that change as we ought to be and those kinds of things. And that's all about, essentially calling ourselves always to a higher order of outcome, productivity, expectations for ourselves. I'm working as I have been driving. I was in Cleveland yesterday coming back in the car and had a chance to ruminate on a few thoughts along those lines.
Yvonne?
I had a question regarding the gender equity payments to female faculty that initially were going to go out with the first fall paycheck but have been delayed. Is there any sense of time, when that might be taken care of or
I know that the provost is working very, very hard on that, and the goal is ultimately to do what is the responsible and appropriate thing, and there are differing opinions about how best to address questions of equity. Clearly, we want to do that, and clearly the provost has strategies and some thoughts about that, and we have tried to communicate that. I was disappointed that... apparently that seemed to have not received the full attention of others as it should have in terms of communication processes. But I think we made an assumption there that was not a correct assumption in terms of communication. So
when you say an assumption on your part, you're saying you should have communicated better?
Well, I think the provost had some conversations with, this is really with the bargaining unit, the WMU-AAUP, and, we have, from my perspective, great respect for the organization and leadership there. And we had communicated, as I understand it, the provost had, that this would be delayed, and then somehow that didn't seem to be transmitted fully, and so therefore I think we have to accept responsibility for that.
I had heard that initially, and then I received a phone call back from the administration saying that actually they had communicated with your own leadership, not the AAUP, and that they really wanted to get that corrected. So
I'm not.
So it sounds like it just was unfortunate, the miscommunication.
Communicated such that, so we apologize for that.
All right. Western Michigan University President John Dunn, thank you for your time, as
always.
Thank you. And thanks again to Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thanks so much for having me, Gordon.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.